Welcome to Rolling Stone Music Now. Today we're going to listen to an interview with Florence Welch of Florence and the Machine, where she talks about some of the music that moves her the most, her favorite books, and some of her rules to live by. We're also going to talk about a new project from Jenny Lewis. But first... And that was a little bit of Door, the new song from Jenny Lewis's new band called Nice as Fuck. Best band name so far of the summer. I'm here with Sarah Grant. What's up, Sarah?
Not much.
Glad Sarah, you wrote the review for the new Nice as Fuck album.
Yes.
We're just going to keep saying Nice as Fuck over and over again. tell me what the story is with this.
Sure. So Jenny Lewis debuted Nice as Fuck with... The Likes' Tennessee Thomas and Au Revoir Simone's Erica Forster. They actually debuted it at a Bernie Sanders rally.
Which is an awesome debut.
Exactly.
Let's see, Au Revoir Simone, they're like an indie rock band from Brooklyn.
Yes.
And The Like have been around for a little while. They're from LA, I think.
Right. But all indie rock kind of pseudo veterans at this point. They're a little young to call them veterans, but they've been around. And this is a really nice... fun, breezy summer album. It's straightforward melodies. You can really tell Jenny Lewis is having a lot of fun on this
That's
record.
The bottom. Yeah, they just sound like they're having a great time on this record. Yeah.
Jenny Lewis's last solo album was Voyager, and she actually told Rolling Stone that that record helped her get through one of the hardest periods of her life. It was produced by Ryan Adams. And
that's a wonderful record.
It's a beautiful record.
It's really personal, yeah.
And so you can really tell that this is maybe coming out of that storm a little bit, coming out the other side. She takes some really fun, quirky risks on this album. There's a song called Home Run, which is sort of like this pseudo-funk cheerleader chant.
Yeah, that's like kind of like almost hip-hop, and she's kind of like, yelling at the mic which in an awesome way.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. She has this sort of disco vibe on one of my favorite songs, Angel, on the record.
I love that song.
Yeah, the more I listened to the record, the more I was picking out different singers or vibes I felt like she was trying on, like different hats. I mean, Angel has a little, to me, I hear a little bit of B-52s or even Chrissy Hynde.
Yeah, maybe a little Blondie on some of those tracks too.
Exactly. I guess in general, though, this is really a detour into new wave, if you will. Her other solo works have been maybe a bit more on the folk spectrum.
For sure.
And this is just straight ahead, drum and bass, very syncopated, sing-along fare.
It's just like one of those like side projects where like you can tell the artist is just kind of like taking a breath and just like, all right, I'm just gonna have some fun with some friends, and it definitely comes across.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully this kind of dictates her next direction too. I mean, there are some similarities with Voyager in this record. She tries on a bit more of an 80s kind of programmed sound. I mean, program for Jenny Lewis is just kind of anything left of folk, I think.
Right. So, anything without an acoustic guitar up front.
I don't mean to sound that she's...
she's not turning into like Calvin Harris or Deadmau5.
Exactly.
But this is just a fun record. So, I mean, do you have any sense of when they're going to, if they're going to tour a little more or keep this going?
Yeah, they're on tour this summer. Mm-hmm. I think they announced they're playing New York sometime in the next 2 months, I believe, but they're on tour.
All right. Well, everybody, we're going to keep an eye out for Nice as Fuck, and thanks for coming on, Sarah.
Thank you.
All right.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
And that was Ship to Wreck from Florence and the Machine. For the main segment of this episode, we're going to get some of the life lessons and rules that Florence Welch, the lead singer of Florence and the Machine, lives by. I'm here with David Brown, who interviewed Florence a few months ago. Hey, David.
Hey, Nathan. How are you?
All right. So, David, do you want to first explain? One reason we're doing this is that we recently ran an interview with Noel Gallagher. Actually, that was the last episode that people really loved, and it had some of his life lessons. And it was for the same page that this interview with Florence was for. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is? It's called The Last Word.
Yeah, the column's called Last Word. It's in the last page of the magazine. And what's really fun about it is that we talk to people not just about their current projects, whether it's an album or a movie or whatever, but we really try to dig into where they are in their lives, what things shape them in their lives, their kind of worldview, and try to really, kind of paint a portrait in a way of where they are and what shaped them.
Like what books they like and the music that moves them the most and kind of what they do in their free time. And it's nice. People kind of go in different directions and
Yeah, and you never know what you're going to get. What's really fun. We ask similar questions of some people, and some questions we shape to particular artists, you know. But even so, you kind of never know what they're going to say when you ask about a childhood favorite book or what are you doing in your spare time or whatever. Sometimes they're caught a little bit off guard even, and they have to really think about it. They don't go for the pat answers.
Right. Sometimes people are kind of locked into their promo cycle and are kind of expecting to talk about the producer of their new album. And nothing against that. But Florence was absolutely charming, as she usually is. She's kind of, I would say, like a bit of a hippie in the best sense, like a real free, open spirit.
A free spirit in a way. And I've interviewed her for a couple of times in the magazine. And what's always fun about talking to her is that she's really kind of open and candid. You know, she's really just kind of throws it out there. And I wouldn't go so far as to say she uses interviews for therapeutic reasons, but I mean, she really is happy to talk about any number of stuff and what's happening in her life, for example.
Here she talks a lot about Patti Smith in kind of an interesting way, and her idols, and Grace Slick, who doesn't get talked about a lot, and she does.
The books and music that influenced her as a kid, as a child and teenager, were not the things you would expect. You know, everything from Little House on the Prairie to White Rabbit.
Right.
You know, and those aren't necessarily things that come to mind immediately, I think, when you think of Florence Welch.
Right. But let's get into it. Let's just, how about without any further ado, this is David Brown interviewing Florence Welch.
Who are your heroes and why? I read one interview a few years ago where you mentioned Grace Slick.
Grace Slick was when I first, I think I was sitting in my room as a teenager and I listened to White Rabbit and my whole perspective just exploded, I think. My dad said he came in. I was sitting there with headphones on, and he just looked at my face, and it was like this light bulb had gone on.
What about that song or her singing? What about that moved you so much?
It was just kind of there was something sort of it was psychedelic, but it was soulful and kind of apocalyptic in a way, and fantastical and magical but dark as well. It had all these elements of things that I liked, and but they were putting them all together, you know. And I think I'm really drawn to things that sort of feel like overwhelming in something that creates an overwhelming feeling. And I think Patti Smith is definitely one of my heroes. Recently I've been reading M Train and she just writes with such beauty. And also she's like such, there's like so much in there about coffee. And you know, I've been on coffee for ages, and I think Patti Smith like really got me back, so back into it.
Into coffee?
And yeah,
that's
right. She was like, I can drink 14 cups a day and still, you know, be fine. And I was, you know, I personally cannot do that. she's nailed.
You first heard Patti's music, or do you have a favorite song or record of hers?
Well, it was probably like, you know, I think it came in when I first started going to like art college parties, because I grew up in a place that was like was a big art college, and before I went to art college I was like 16 and crashing all the art college parties. Mm-hmm. I think I heard Gloria, and I think that's kind of when she came into my consciousness. And actually, like, it's her writing, I think, I mean, her music first, and then it's her writing that has made me feel very, like, you know, you feel very close to her, because her books, it's just so, she's really given us some really beautiful, parts of herself, I feel, with these books, and, like, really, she's just captured these periods of time, or, like, captured her, I mean, it's just so beautiful, like, that, the M Train kind of is like a memoir to her husband, and mm-hmm. you feel very honored that she has given, you know, this kind of piece of her heart. So I think that from reading these books, I felt very kind of, you know, I felt very grateful to her for doing that. You know, mm-hmm. it was a really generous thing to do, I think. Mm. And it's like, and it was funny little coincidences, like I was recommended to read this. I was recommended to read a Murakami book, The Wind Up Bird Chronicles, which I recommended to, you know, we got a little online fan book club.
Right, right.
Two books.
Right.
And as I was reading M Train, and I read quite a lot, so I'm reading kind of books all at once, and I was reading M Train and reading this Murakami book, which was like so incredible, like, but, and she actually, while I was reading Murakami, she started writing about that exact same book in the middle of this of M Train. She has as a passage about Wind Up Bird Chronicles. So it was kind, you know, I really, that was like a little, like, nice little coincidence there. So I think she's been like, just through her writing and her, and also like her beauty, I think, in really truly being herself and being very and really honoring herself, and kind of, I think that's so, to hold yourself like that in the public eye, I find that so, like, I think that is, you know, I find that incredibly inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
She feels like she's truly herself.
Right. Well, it leads to one of our other questions, and maybe it kind of feeds off that in a way. Like, what are the most important rules that you live by? And is that somebody like Patti convey that?
I think it's taken me... The important rules that I live by. Do you know what? I think I'm still like learning what they are, you know. What did I do? I got famous. I got famous when I was about 21.
Mm-hmm.
It was very exciting. It was totally thrilling and magical, and also completely terrifying. But I didn't know. I haven't realized how scared I was until I actually paused what it was like when I was 27, you know, like 6 years later,
right.
And like had a bit of a, like, I had to, like, because, you know, as I got more famous, I think my created a shield, as it were. You know, kind of the hair got redder, my eyebrows bleached, the costumes got bigger, you know, and so in a sense it was to live in this creation, in this kind of magical alternate universe, and that kept me safe. Right. But that cracks eventually. So I think I really had to like relearn how to be in the public eye in a more like raw way, perhaps. So I guess I think the rules I live by is maybe like, I'm just trying to learn how to be less afraid to be, like, just to be, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And to live, like, in the moment, and to be, to try and not to allow myself perhaps to be vulnerable in ways that I hadn't before. And it's kind of, and I feel like I hit 27 and I did, like, a lot of changes happened and I did a lot of growing up, but it's a process. I'm figuring out, I think right now is quite a crucial period. I think when you get to about 30, I'm trying to figure out the person I want to be moving forward with the rest of my life. And I'm working that out at the moment.
Is there any recent example that comes to mind of being more vulnerable? And does it have to do with the costumes and things also that you mentioned earlier?
I think so, yeah. And just like, you know, this last record was quite open and quite exposing, and that felt really uncomfortable, because I think lyrically I'd always perhaps worked with things like taking a specific event and turning into something different, you know, allowing metaphor as a protection. And I think with this record perhaps things are a bit more literal and like a bit more face value, and that was very uncomfortable for me when it came to release it. And actually I'm glad I did, you know, and now I'm learning that perhaps if something feels different or uncomfortable, it means maybe you're growing. It sounds like such like hippie stuff, but it's kind of and maybe, you know, if creatively something feels like a bit exposing, you know, maybe it's a good thing. Because you're challenging yourself, you're doing something a bit differently. But yeah, I think I had to allow myself to be vulnerable, even in the way of like not having less effects on the vocals was terrifying to me. Not having less effects on the vocals was kind of quite frightening to me. Because I used to love reverb, and everything would just be swamped in reverb and loads of choral stuff. I think that's kind of... It was me and Marcus Stravs, who produced the record, we would have kind of like arguments about reverb, and I would be like, please, can you just put some reverb on the song, like nearly crying. And he was like, no, it's good the way it is. You have to be vulnerable. You have to just let your voice be the way it is. And I think, again, like that's about just trying not to hide, you know, or to trying not, you know, just to be exposed and vulnerable. And I think that's kind of, it's been really good though. It's been, you know, with the videos and everything, it's been about, I'm figuring out, I think right now is quite a crucial period. I think when you get to about 30, I'm trying to figure out the person I want to be moving forward with the rest of my life. And I'm working that out at the moment.
Is there any recent example that comes to mind of being more vulnerable? And does it have to do with the costumes and things also that you mentioned earlier?
I think so, yeah. And just like, you know, this last record was quite open and quite exposing, and that felt really uncomfortable, because I think lyrically I'd always perhaps worked with things like taking a specific event and turning into something different, you know, allowing metaphor as a protection. And I think with this record perhaps things are a bit more literal and like a bit more face value, and that was very uncomfortable for me when it came to release it. And actually, it was very, it was, I'm glad I did, you know, and now I'm learning that perhaps if something feels different or uncomfortable, it means maybe you're growing. It sounds like such, like,
right,
hippie stuff, but it's kind of, and maybe, you know, if creatively something feels like a bit exposing, you know, maybe it's a good thing,
right,
because you're, you know, you're challenging yourself, you're doing something a bit differently. But yeah, I think I had to allow myself to be vulnerable, even in this, even in the way of like not having less effects on the vocals was terrifying to me. Not having less effects on the vocals was kind quite frightening to me. Because I used to just love reverb and everything would just be swamped in reverb and loads of choral stuff. And, but yeah, I think that kind of, it was, me and Marcus Stravs, who produced the record, we would have kind of like arguments about reverb and I would be like, please, can you just put some reverb on the song, like nearly crying. And he was like, no. Good the way it is. You have to be vulnerable. You have to just let your voice be the way it is. And I think, again, like that's about just trying not to hide, you know, or to trying not, you know, just to be exposed and vulnerable. And I think that's kind of, it's been really good though. It's been, you know, with the videos and everything, it's been about, you have to try and stay in the moment and be like, I don't want to just like grumble through this and then realize actually those are the best years of my life and all I did was complain about my life. But it really is, it's like the, because it's so much exciting stuff is happening and it's like you have to pay attention to it, you know, you have
right.
And
do you have to deal with paparazzi and stuff like that, especially with your hair and your image, and is that like a problem with you at all?
Do you know what, it kind of like, it is something, it's like, because I'm actually like quite shy and like quite, for someone quite like, you know, it's funny, like in the more kind of, and it, but I don't get it that badly. It really, like, I pretty much just get left alone. Especially, like, in London, not really at all. Like, if I go and stay somewhere in New York, like, where everyone stays, like, there'll probably be paparazzi hanging around anyway. And, you know, it's, but it's not actually, like, a very, it's not actually, like, a very big part of my life. Especially maybe as I've got older and, like, a bit more boring. It's something that makes me anxious, definitely, but it's not, I've got quite, when I'm at home and I'm just like working, I've got quite a quiet existence, and I've got like the same friends, you know, since school, and it's like quite, I've got quite a, you know, I've got quite a like, yeah, like a pretty mellow existence, like if I'm just like at home in London, just I'm kind of just like hanging out, reading, seeing friends, so there's not really that much to photograph.
what's the best advice you ever got?
It would probably be, I mean, this is like being quite honest, but it would probably be, why don't you try not drinking for a while? See what happens.
Here's a question we always ask people, and it's sort of a geographical sort of question in a way. You're from London, or a particular part of it. What's the most British or most London thing about you?
Oh, maybe it's like, probably find it quite hard to accept a compliment. Maybe. Or like quite can be... What's the most British thing? I think I'm definitely growing into my Britishness as well. I'm definitely becoming more and more like British, which probably is like, a lot of a lot of sarcasm. Or I don't know. I think I get this from my dad as well, though, which is like almost. I don't know if this is a British thing or maybe just a. I think it's a Welsh family thing where we can't. I find it very hard to say something like that's maybe like quite saying something that's like intimate without followed by a joke.
Okay.
It's like always have to like somehow like when you feel vulnerable, like quickly make it sarcastic, you know, pull it back.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's a specifically British thing or if it's
right.
a Welsh family thing. I know me and my sister both do it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of, I think it's funny because I think I love walking as well. I love being able to walk around the city, and riding my bike around London is one of my favorite things to do.
Your favorite book as a kid, and what do you think it says about you?
Let me think. You know, I was like really, really into like Little House on the Prairie, and for Christmas my aunt gave us these like sort of cotton smock prairie dresses, and dress me and my little sister up, and we would make the prairie in our house. I would make like a lake out of towels, and then we would have to like go and kind of, you know, like go into the fields. And but I mean, I loved this was when I was a bit older. I remember really loving the Philip Pullman book. I loved Anne of Green Gables.
Oh, wow.
Little House on the Prairie. Pippi Longstocking.
Okay.
Was a big favorite.
What music still moves you the most? What are your go-to? If you want to just throw on a favorite album or two that's an old favorite, you know, or artist.
Ah, okay. What do I listen to?
We're pushing into the deep recesses of your memory banks here. But you're doing great, though.
I know. I think, like, early stuff. I mean, my dad used to play me the Velvet Underground a lot. Like, because my dad always had, like, great taste, and so I kind of grew up on a diet of like the Velvet Underground, and he played me the Smiths a lot, I think, and the Stones. I think he was really excited when I got to sing Gimme Shelter with Mick Jagger, because he was like, you know, I always thought that was the song that you were supposed to sing, and so it kind of was really amazing when it finally happened. But yeah, I think I started listening to a lot of like soul from quite young. I was really obsessed with Billie Holiday and Etta James and Nina Simone. Was really like they were the first voices I remember being really, really drawn to.
What advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh. It's so hard because I just don't think, it's hard because you kind of have to live it and you have to live through it. And it's right. Almost like people can tell you stuff to do in this industry and they can tell you the way you should do it. But it really is such a personal thing. And it's like you have to stumble, you have to make your own mistakes so that you learn who you are and you get, you know, you kind of have to do that. And you will, people can tell you what to do, but you're just going to do it anyway. You know, people can tell you not to do something and you'll eventually just do it, and you have to learn from that.
Right.
And I think, what was my advice?
is there an example that comes to mind of something that you just have to do and live through it and deal with the consequences?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like, well, there would probably be like certain, like, there would probably be like certain sartorial choices. like not do in hindsight, but, so young and you're in the public eye and you're just like exploring.
Right. How about the most most indulgent purchase you've ever made?
I bought myself a bracelet for my birthday that was like a tortoise that had diamonds in it. So that's literally like a diamond tortoise. It feels like very indulgent.
Was that a recent birthday?
It was like a tortoise and it had little diamond eye. Hmm. So yeah, that was the diamond tortoise. Very extravagant.
Any idea how much that cost?
Well, I know how much it costs, but I was going to say.
That's okay. Let me throw one more question at you before we have to go. Your favorite city in the world?
I don't know. I think it's like split between I feel like because I'm so transient, it's hard. I have little... My heart is in lots of different cities all at once, you know, because I've got friends now, like in LA, in New York, in London, you know, and yeah, I like really love Rome so much, like for the romance, and you know, I'm also being like kind of obsessed with like, you know, the Renaissance art and the culture there. It's like really, I mean, I spent a lot of time in Florence with my mum when I was a child because she's a professor of Renaissance history, so I'm really drawn to kind of like Italian cities and architecture. But so I don't know.
Rome. Yeah, no, I'm sure you've been to so many places. Well, as far as Rome, I mean, is the Vatican? I mean, are there sites like that too that draw you to, or all the fountains all over the place?
Yeah, I mean, that place is like, it's like every corner is like some piece of like architectural beauty, you know. It's like really, you're sort of really, it's such a wonderful place to like walk around in. I love places that you can feel like the history, you know, you feel it. To walk around a city that still has ruins in it, you know, it's kind of really appealing to me.
Right. Cool.
And that was the wit and wisdom of Florence Welch of Florence and the Machine. That's it for Rolling Stone Music Now today. If you like what you heard, come check us out on iTunes and maybe leave a review.